Hello again and welcome everybody to another episode of BitNotes. This is David Collins playing video game and video game music, and I hope you enjoy the songs we've got lined up for you in the show. Hope you enjoy and have a listen. To start things off, I thought I'd just talk about something that's going a bit on in games, and that is the release of the latest Humble Indie Bundle. Now, I've talked about the Humble Indie Bundle on the show before, but I think at this stage I think it's nice to look back on it, because it's played such a great role in games, and especially indie game development and promotion, but at the same time it's changed a lot over its history, so I think it's kind of interesting just to look back on what exactly happened. So where do I start with the Humble Indie Bundle? Well, it started back a long time ago in 2010, and basically a bunch of indie independent developers that made a bunch of games decided, you know, it's kind of hard to get press because, you know, we're competing against major games companies that have PR departments and everything. And we've made a couple of games that aren't exactly the bleeding edge cutting visual quality or anything, but they're still good games that focus on one thing and do it pretty well, and it'd be nice to get this larger attention. So one guy, largely Jeffrey Rosen, creator of Lugaroo, which I talked about in the show, which is basically a bunny martial arts game. Incidentally, now he's working on Overgrowth, which is kind of like a spiritual successor and has been going on a long time in development. But he basically got a bunch of developers together and said, let's package our games together and provide it as a bundle and say that people could choose whatever they wanted to pay it for. So maybe each of these games might be selling online for $20 and people would have to log in and enter their credit card details and buy it. And he's saying, no, let's have all our games in a bundle and people can choose whatever their price, even a single cent. And that was crazy. And that was the first bundle, and it was a huge hit, and I loved it. And basically, everyone lapped it up. These guys supported a bunch of things. They supported DRM-free, which basically meant that they weren't going to be programs that stopped you from pirating, which basically were very popular at the time because developers wanted to protect their investment, but tended, if the DRM misfires, then you could end up buying a game legitimately and not being able to play it because the game thought that you were pirating the game when you actually weren't. There are a lot of messy ways it can work like that. And so that they provided that. They said, let's also make the games cross-platform, so it's not just on Windows, it's also on Mac and Linux, which spread our user base, and supporting independent games, people who made these games out of love. And that was 4 years ago, and things have changed a lot since then. But before I just talk a bit more about all the little changes it's made, I think I'm going to play one of the things that actually made the Humble Indie Bundle such a huge hit, and that was its marketing, or sales pitch. Now, I know what I just said. Wait a sec. All these major games companies, they have all these money to spend in marketing budgets and billboards and everything, and that's true. But just because you're honestly zero budget, and especially with the internet, it doesn't mean that you still can't form an effective marketing campaign. And one of the things they did was key to selling their games was to create a video. The video was very simple. It explained the terms, which were appealing enough in itself. It helps to market something if you've actually got something that's worth marketing, of course. It gave a quick glimpse of all the games. It iterated it all. And it also had a nice kind of rap going on with a nice, very nice background music. Now, the music itself was composed by John Graham. And he ended up making a lot of tunes for a lot of different bundles. And what I'm going to play now is the actual main theme tune, the main theme of the Humble Indie Bundle. It's called Sounds Like It's Going to Bundle. It's the main Humble Bundle theme song. And I'm going to play it for you now. This wasn't the one that accompanied the first video, but I figured this is the one that kind of sums up the whole move, and it gives you a good sense of style and everything and works well on its own. So have a listen to this song and just think that there's music like that that helped spur the Humble Indie Bundle into popularity and being spread throughout the internet and YouTube links. And we'll talk a bit more about where the Humble Indie Bundle went from there afterwards. Have a listen and hope you enjoy. Thank you. I hope you enjoyed that track. As I said before, that was Sounds Like It's Going to Bundle. It is the main Humble Bundle theme song. It was composed by John Graham and is often used as the background music for some of the Humble Bundle video promotions, though, like I said, not the first one. So after the first one, it was a massive success. Over $1 million was raised, and it wasn't just for indie game developers, but it was also for charities that they allowed as well. Gamers loved it because it showed that indie gamers were respecting them and also giving them games at low prices that were DRM free. So of course they tried to repeat that success again and chose another bundle with another selection of indie games. They got into the habit of adding more games as the bundle progressed, as well as also offering previous bundles, you know, like you might get Humble Bundle 5 but also get all the games from Humble Bundle 4 if you paid around a certain amount. Everything was going well, and to be honest, here's the thing, I'm kind of split. In a lot of ways it did continue well, but there was always an undercurrent of something slightly else. For instance, it soon became clear that Humble Bundle were like repeating the same games in. Now, it's kind of regular if like you do a Humble Indie Bundle and you say if you pay over the things you'll get all the games from the previous bundle as well, and that's kind of understandable. But they started, for instance, doing Humble Indie Bundles devoted to a specific game developer, such as like Voxtron, which was making a game that hadn't even been released yet. And actually, come to think of it, that's another slight problem with one of the later Humble Indie Bundle games, that they were releasing games that hadn't quite been released. And it sort of continued. If I'm going to be critical about the game, and I don't like being critical about the Humble Indie Bundle, but sometimes it became clear that, you know, instead of like scouring the internet for like a lot of really great and hidden indie games and promoting them, a lot of the times it seemed to be more based on the network of friends of the people running the bundle. And that's a huge accusation to make, except for the fact that I once read in an internet forum about how Puppy Games, I think I talked about them, I think they did Attack on the Titans, sort of a tower defense sort of game, admitted that they got into the Humble Indie Bundle 50% because they made a good game and 50% because they knew Jeffrey Rosen. So if one of the game developers itself is admitting it, I'm not sure you can deny it any other way. But at the same time, they also expanded their scope. They sometimes would make bundles devoted to a indie game developer, which would give that game developer a lot of exposure, but not exactly give the whole broad range of games that some of the gamers were looking for. However, over time, in fairness, they kept bringing new and new great games. In later bundles, they included great titles like Bastion, To the Moon, Brutal Legend. Of course, Brutal Legend wasn't quite indie, but it was made by Tim Schafer, who kind of like had the spirit of indie, so everyone kind of gave him a pass on that one. Tiny and Big, Grandpa's Leftovers, Papa EO. Dear gosh, I love Papa EO. I may not have actually even discovered that game if not for the Humble Indie Bundle, so I really got to be appreciative of that right now. And the most recent bundle, of course, has Papers, Please and Gone Home, which are both pretty kick-ass indie games. Also, another thing that developed is that they expanded just beyond the Humble Indie bundles. It started out, they'd make one and there'd be a bit of a space in the next one, but they started speeding up the frequency, and then they created different types of Humble Indie bundles, like the Voxtron bundle, and then they did ebook bundles and also music bundles. And then something major happened. THQ, which was a major game developer that, due to some questionable investments, was going bankrupt, and as one of the last ditch efforts to save them was to make their games available, AAA games, on the Humble Indie Bundle. This was a huge opportunity, but kind of part of the problem, and this was something else, is that the Humble Indie Bundle kind of like sacrificed some of their values, if you will, in order to go for that. And basically the games in that bundle weren't cross-platform, and because they were tied to Steam, i.e. since you had to be running Steam in order to play the game, they weren't exactly DRM free either, which of course got a bit of feedback. But at the same time, a lot of people were saying, hey, these are like AAA game, huge professionally high budgeted games that we're getting for free, so why complain? And that's a totally valid point of view to have as well. And in fairness, they say that that was the Humble THQ bundle, and that the Humble Indie bundles, which is the main series, have always been cross-platform and DRM free, except in the occasional case where they leave out Linux or leave it a couple of months after release, which doesn't happen that often. I think it was really only Gianna Sisters where they totally haven't delivered at all, but one or two games there was a bit of a delay or something, but it got sorted out more or less. But at the same time, I'm being kind of very cynical, because they've released a lot of different bundles and they gave a lot of savings, and often they do pay more than the average to get some extra games, and sometimes they even say pay more than $25 to get something extra like Prison Architect or something. And that's like, okay, why are you even in the Humble Indie Bundle if you're not actually trying to be a little, even the tiniest bit flexible on your price? But like I said, that's just me being, I guess, a bit cynical and because we've taken a thing. The truth is, it's given us a lot of really great games at a pretty low price. They've made connections with a lot of AAA game developers like Adult Swim. They, with Tim Schafer and Double Fine, they even like had this whole scheme where you could see their games being developed. And they had other special bundles like the Humble 2K bundle and the Humble EA bundle, each which gave, you know, huge AAA games at a low price. But I do think that something is that keeping so many bundles going on side by side has kind of, I suppose, in marketing sense, diluted the brand a bit. And some of the initial excitement over it being a kind of an insurgence of the little guy over the big guy, which made it so attractive in the first place, that's kind of died down. So it's more like a very well-respected and decent-running, you know, promotion that is kind of exciting and is still sort of fun, but just maybe not the initial rush it always had. I think that it's a good thing, and if any of you guys want to check it out, just go to humblebundle.com. Right now, they've got the Humble Bundle, the Weekly Bundle, they're doing a lot of weekly bundles, the Books Bundle, the Mobile Bundle, the Flash Bundle, and then, of course, I've completely forgot, they've also got the Humble Store, which is actually another really cool thing. Because people were buying so many games through the Humble Indie Bundles, everyone had to have an account so they could keep track of all their bundles. And to add to that further, they ended a Humble Store where people could just buy games directly and have them directly added to it. So I think that's great. It just shows it's another competitor to sites like Good Old Games and, of course, Steam, which also do buying games online. And it's become pretty, and you just have to admire how it's grown in such a way. All right, I think that I better start talking a little less about ways that games have been sold and back onto games. So just thanks to all those at Humble Bundle for the great games and everything. And it's time to move on to another game. A game where not only was it available for sale over the Humble Indie Bundle, but, and this is actually something that I am totally, you know, I totally doff my hat to the Humble Indie Bundle at. They provide soundtracks nearly always. You buy games on the Humble Indie Bundle, they provide the soundtracks, you go into login, and you literally get links to download the soundtracks. I mean, no confusion, no authorization, no cookies, no JavaScript. You just click, do you want to download the soundtrack in FLAC format, which if you don't know what that means, then it's probably not important to you, or do you want to download MP3? You click one, you get a zip file, soundtrack there, brilliant, fantastic. I just love it. I've had so many soundtracks from that bundle, and it's just provided me with so many great music from very many great games. And one of those great games, of course, is System Shock, which has a history in and of itself. It only even turned up on the Humble Indie Bundle because of work that Good Old Games did, and in trying to actually make sure that the game could be sold again, because this is one of those games that get wrapped up in licensing disputes, and it just becomes very hard to extract. A little like a Turrican, if I told you a bit about it a while back. But what is System Shock 2? Well, it is, quite unsurprisingly, a sequel to System Shock 1, which I talked about on the show before. It was released in 1997 and was very influential, although it didn't quite sell enough, so it was technically considered a financial failure. But it has certainly had a lot of fans. In fact, it was one of the most requested games to be added back to goodoldgames.com, GOG.com, so that people could download it and play it once again. And I was actually ahead of the crowd and managed to buy a CD off of eBay and play it, actually using Wine and Linux, which, if you don't know what that means, don't worry about it. It's nothing alcoholic. But it's quite the game. So why don't I just play some music from that, and we'll talk a bit more about the game afterwards. Sounds like a plan? Cool. And what we just had there was Med Sci 1 from the soundtrack of System Shock 2. It was composed by Eric Brosius, and it was the game was developed by Irrational Games and Looking Glass Studio. Yes, it was a collaboration between two game studios, and it came out pretty well. Now, to be honest, as I said in the last thing, my favorite was always the System Shock 1 game. I liked System Shock 1 more because it was more claustrophobic, it felt more cohesive, it felt like every step mattered, whereas with System Shock 2, it's just, there were just, it was, primarily I felt it was too open. There was way too much walking around in areas, long corridors, and just big areas to walk around that really weren't kind of sparsely populated. And that's one of the things that got the game for me. But it was still good in a lot of other aspects. It still contained a lot of the, you know, being cerebral, hacking, trying to figure out the right, you know, right ways to improve yourself, and you were still basically a guy who was in a spaceship far away from Earth, and then suddenly you've basically woken up from cryogenic sleep, just like the protagonist in the previous game, only to find out that pretty much everything has gone to heck, and you're basically trying to fight your way through a bunch of what look like zombies, robots, and everything trying to kill you scenarios in order to basically defeat what seems to be an extremely malevolent AI. Although, I don't want to spoil a little too much about this game, because this game actually does have a bit more of a plot than you're expecting, and there is actually a twist in this game, which I'm just going to avoid referring to completely. But the game is very nicely integrated into the original System Shock. There's some very nice narrative things that connect the two games, and the game, for one thing, actually, the son of the evil guy in the first game is in this game, and so you're kind of wondering, wait a sec, is this guy going to... The guy says he's not going to repeat his father's mistakes, but is he telling the truth? Is it going to be like father, like son, or like son trying to fix the sins of the father? And there's a nice little suspense over that. But there's most of the time, of course, is spent going through completely trashed spaceship surroundings and areas, trying to actually get from a completely screwed-up situation to a less screwed-up situation. The game also features a lot of upgrading paths. Everything's first person, but like with the first System Shock, they try to mix point-and-click adventure and stats management with this traditional first-person shooter management thing, and even though there's the WASD, so it's slightly better, it's still kind of a confusing interface. Any sort of interface where you switch from, like, using mouse to look to suddenly using a mouse to actually have a cursor on the screen to select items is always going to be a little tricky most of the time. Games like this, it was a very influential game, and it also, because like in the first game you're a bit of a cyborg, you get to upgrade yourself. The problem I had with this is that I was trying to, you've got various paths which you can upgrade. Do you want to upgrade insert this weapon or that weapon? I decided to upgrade an electrical weapon so that I have this really powerful looking electric weapon, only to find that it only shot EMP devices, and I already had EMP grenades and was utterly ineffective of everything else. So what really pissed me off about the upgrade path is it takes 20 hours of the game before you try to see how your choices and upgrade path play out, and by then, unless you want to completely start the game from the beginning, you don't really have any choice on what to do next. Oof. Also, you get a lot of psi powers, which are kind of like magic, only like the sci-fi equivalent. Only, I was spending so much time upgrading my eventually useless electrical weapons and other weapons that I didn't really investigate sci-fi and my powers, so I guess I would have had to replay the game to investigate those as well. It's a pretty good game, like I said, nice twist. Looking back, it's a bit hard, it's a bit tricky, it's still got some charm. You're still able to play video games inside a video game, so that's pretty cool. You've got a PDA that plays video games in the game, so that all sounds pretty good. And after this game, there was never a System Shock 3, of course, always gets announced, but it turned out Irrational Games, one of the developers, ended up creating kind of a spiritual successor in terms of Bioshock, which, if you know much, I haven't talked much about Bioshock on this show, but it's certainly gone on to a series in and of its own right. And so that's kind of where the situation is right now with the System Shock thing. Bioshock is kind of taking the grain, and I don't know if we'll ever get a System Shock 3 that follows directly on from System Shock 2, but, oh well, we'll see how things go anyway. There was a time when we didn't even know whether we'd be able to buy System Shock 2 anymore, and look how that turned out. So we'll see how things go anyway. So System Shock 2, maybe not my favorite game ever, but it's still pretty cool. I'm going to leave you now with Ops 2. It was also composed by Eric Brosius. It's also from System Shock 2, which was developed by Irrational Games and Looking Glass Studios. And have a listen and hope you enjoy. This has been David Collins with BitNote, bringing you great video game music. Have a listen and hope you enjoy.